Okay, welcome back. It's our monthly visit with Stefan Verstappen, the master of self-defense, the creator of communities, the leader of the lame. No, that doesn't work. Leader of the enlightened. How's that? Something.
What are you trying
say
to
something.
Say, Jeff?
I'm tired. It's Friday.
I know.
Anyway, no.
I get tired too because it's late for me. What?
Yeah.
It's 11 o'clock, and when you get to be our age.
I was up last night until 4:30, and then I just said, "What the hell?" And I stayed up.
Really?
Really?
What
I can't sleep. I work until usually 3 or 4 every night, and I've made a change that should allow me to go to bed at 11:30, midnight. But on my clock is still messed up from staying up until 3 or 4. That 3 hours made a big difference. So I'm trying to re-educate my body to go to sleep earlier. So, anyway.
Yeah, I had a weird sleep schedule like that a few years back. I would be up until 6 in the morning and then sleep till noon and then do it again,
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, we've got a couple of things to talk about tonight. It might be kind of fun, and I'm sure you and the great people in your community up there see what's going on down here, that this incoming administration is 100% Zionist Jewish control. Trump is a controlled man. There's no question about it. You see that up there clearly, right?
Oh, absolutely. But very few people see it, Jeff, because most people don't understand Jews and how they work.
Will. No. Yep. All right. Let's just do. All right. Just a 30-second little clip on that. One thing you can always count on: Zionist activist Jews. I'm trying to qualify it a little bit because there are a lot of Jews out there that aren't involved with this stuff. They really are.
No, that's true. I shouldn't use a general term like that. It's just force of habit.
We do. It's okay. But what goes on is the first thing out the window is the Kol Nidre prayer, which if you recite it, you are forgiven for one full year in advance for any lies you might tell, any crimes you might commit. And that brings me back to my intent was to mention that everything you see coming out of Tel Aviv, Israel, and any organized Zionist group should be considered to be at least a partial lie, if not a total lie. These people are pre-forgiven. They have a different morality, if you can even use that term. They don't give a damn about Goyim. They look upon us as simply conveniences to be used like Kleenex in a box. And now we've got an incoming regime down here. Trump, I still think, was supposed to have his head explode in Butler, Pennsylvania. And they made a deal with him afterward. They missed. And they said, look, they didn't tell him necessarily they did it. But they say, well, we'll protect you. We just need you to, we know you support Israel, but we need a little bit more from you. And he's, yes, sir, yes, sir. He is doing everything to perpetuate the genocide. He will do everything, let me be exact, to do what he can to perpetuate the genocide of the Palestinian people, to continue the war in Lebanon, the fighting, the attacks the Jews are carrying out on Yemen, and what they're doing in Syria, which is basically trying to take control of the whole place, or as much of it as they can. It's all about Greater Israel. We're in real big trouble here. And it's, again, 0.02% of the entire world population. Maybe what? 15 million people. Total. Anyhow,
yeah.
You had a very interesting trip. You went to visit Dachau, one of the infamous alleged Holocaust centers during World War II, which we know now that the Holocaust was anything but as reported. Just a joke.
Well, that's bad why joke. I want to talk about it, Jeff, because for those who don't know, there is a war on, and I hate to use these racial terms, but, we're forced into it. They set the dialogue. They set the the language, and but there is a war on white people.
Oh yes.
And,
oh yes.
I mean, it's so obvious. I don't know. No, Tom, get the cats again. As soon as they hear that I'm online doing a podcast, here come the cats. Anyways, look, there is a war on white people. I prefer to call it European heritage.
European Americans, Europeans, whatever. European heritage works.
I hate the term white. Growing up, nobody ever used that term when I was a kid, white. We never heard of it. That all came in with the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a war on white people. The discrimination, the open discrimination against white people, we see time and time again now with the DEI hires. And how well is that working out there, L.A.?
Amen.
It's ridiculous.
To that.
You know, it's ridiculous. Oh, we can't hire white people. I've heard this already for years and years. And white people are the only ones you're allowed to discriminate against. Look what they did there in North Carolina. We can't help you because of the floods, because you're white. I mean, listen, folks, we are in a battle. They, the Zionists, the Talmudists, the Khazarians, whatever label we want to use for the chosen ones, are out to murder us, to genocide us. And one of the reasons they get away with it, or one of the excuses they use, is because of the events of World War II. Because, you know, the alleged extermination of Jews in World War II, and because of that, all white people all over the world are now condemned. Right? We're all responsible for Canadians, Australians, New Zealand, Americans, people that had never had anything to do, even if you believe the story is true. Still, we had nothing to do with it. None of us did. Not my family. Nobody that I know or have ever met. And yet we are all painted with the same brush. It's okay to discriminate against us because we're ready to genocide the chosen ones at the drop of a hat. And most of that is pinned on this World War II propaganda of the death camps. So I wanted to talk about the trip that I made to Dachau in 1973.
That's at the height of the Holocaust drumbeat back then. That was when I really started to put the pedal to the metal on that. Okay,
that's
this is very interesting. What caused you to go? What was your motivation?
Well, I'll regress a little bit. I was 16 years old, and I wanted to backpack through Europe.
Uh-huh.
Now, and, Jeff, you have no idea what we've lost. You do. You have an idea. But most listeners, and anybody under 60 has no idea what we lost. Europe, back in 1973, was before the big migration, refugees that, you know.
Oh, it's like Disneyland. It was like a storybook Disneyland.
It was, Jeff. It was mm-hmm. beautiful. And mm-hmm. they had this tradition. I don't know when it started. I'm guessing sometime in the 50s, where in the summertime, college students from all over Europe would travel. And to facilitate the travel, they had done a couple of things. All the governments united on this. One thing they did was they issued what was called a Eurail pass. Now, I think they still have that, but a Eurail pass was, at the time, I think I paid $75. And it was a card, and that allowed you to travel anywhere, on any train, uh-huh. on any bus, on yeah. any ferry, for free. And so you could, you know, there were times when, you know, I'd be celebrating the National Day in Switzerland, and I would use the card to get on the cruise ship in Lake Geneva. And after a hard night of partying, I would wake up in Rome, you know. And after traveling to Rome, I would go to Barcelona. I mean, it was wonderful. And the other thing, and again, all the European countries cooperated with this, is they had a network of what they called youth hostels, the Jeugdherberg. And for $2 a night, Jeff, that's what they charge, $2 a night to stay in these youth hostels. And I'm not talking some dingy, crappy-looking warehouse of places. A lot of these were, like, located in refurbished medieval castles overlooking the Seine River and in chateaus and cottages. And typically it was, some bunk beds, right? You slept in bunk beds in the room, but you had a common kitchen and bathroom. And all of this was available provided you were under 21 years old or younger. So it was all students. And so you would go there, and you would meet people from all over Europe. We all traveled together. We would tell stories, and it was beautiful, Jeff. The adventures, the friends I've made, and you'd meet people from Denmark and Sweden and Switzerland and France and all. It was wonderful. It was safe. There was no crime. There was no third world immigration yet. It literally was Disneyland, except unlike Disneyland, it was all authentic. What a wonderful time. So
everybody, I never went. It was after that, but everybody I know who did that before it went to hell said the same thing. It was just like a fairyland. Just everything was beautiful.
Yeah.
People cared. The streets were clean. And look what the communists have done to it. Unreal.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
No. For example, I'll give you one quick anecdote. When I was in Holland, my uncle said, well, if you're planning to go to Switzerland, here's the address of a nice campground. So, okay, it was up in the mountains in Switzerland. I got there by train because in Europe, trains connect everything. Cities, small towns, so you can travel everywhere by train. And so I got off at the station, and there was nobody there. It was 11 o'clock at night, and it was completely deserted. I didn't know where the hell I was. And so I just started walking down the road. I'm going in the direction I think this campground is in, but I didn't know. And so after about an hour of walking, and I'm looking at the addresses along the side of the road, I can't read German, and I can't read French, but I finally came across that had the lettering of the campground. And I thought, well, this must be it. But the gate was closed. So I jumped over the gate, and I'm walking up the road, and I hear a dog barking, and a light turns on in this cottage, and this middle-aged Swiss lady comes out. And, I'm really embarrassed. I didn't want to wake people up and all that, because by now it's midnight, maybe 12:30. She comes out, and she goes, and I says, I'm looking for this campground. She says, yeah, you're in the right spot. She says, are you hungry? I said, no, I'm okay. No, you come in. Well, she insisted. She brought me into the cottage, brought me to the kitchen. She cooked me a wiener schnitzel and fried potatoes and peas. Oh, my God, it was a wonderful meal. And then she took a flashlight and showed me into the campgrounds and showed me a spot where I could set up my tent. That's what it was like, Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, they fed you. They looked at. They were so friendly.
Yeah,
you don't find that anymore. It's gone. So anyways, as you travel, you talk to all the other students and you're going and why you're going there. And so I was convinced to go to München, for the Munich Festival, which is an annual festival in August there in Munich. And wonderful, wonderful. You know, you go to Hofbräuhaus, which is one of these medieval taverns where you get beautiful blonde buxom waitresses in traditional costume that carried 20 liter mugs of beer in their arms.
Now, there's one building there. Harry Cooper reports on, he takes patrols and takes people over to Europe, and he said there's one that they visit every time, which was, it's a restaurant. It was open exactly as it is now before Columbus made his trip to the New World.
Oh, yeah.
Before.
I don't know the name exactly of it, but there were a couple like that.
Yeah.
Hofbräuhaus and Löwenbräuhaus were two of them. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Very famous. And now, because of the festival, all the youth hostels were booked. So to accommodate the overflow, what the city had done was set up a giant circus tent in the local park. I mean, this thing was huge. And for 50 cents, you could go in there and spend the night. They had bathrooms and washing facilities and kitchen facilities. And all you did was you just walked around until you found a place on the grass and you laid out your sleeping bag and that was your bed for the night. Beautiful. You know, it was wonderful. So I wake up the next morning after another long night partying at the Hofbrau House. And some of the students said, "Hey, you want to come with us? Today we're going to go see Dachau." I said, "What? What's Dachau?" They said, "Oh, you know, the Nazi concentration camp." I said, "Really?" And they said, yeah. "How much does that cost?" They said, "Oh, it's all free, Jeff." Uh-huh. The bus ride was free. Entrance was free. Yeah. Okay. Now, I didn't know it then. I know now that it was all part of the propaganda process, okay? Because what they did is, like, everybody in that tent was, like, college students, right?
Yeah.
So they were marketing the Holocaust to the college students. So come for a free tour. I said, "Well, yeah, no, okay,
I guess
I'll come."
They don't miss a trick.
Oh, no. Oh, no. But now I know what they were doing. Back then, I didn't know. I just thought, free bus ride? Okay, I guess. Since you guys are all going, I'll go with you, right?
Sure.
Because I was traveling by myself. I was alone. And I would just meet up with other groups of people. And then I would travel with a half a dozen Swiss students. And then I would travel with some Danish students. And, you know, so they were all going. I said, "Yeah, I'll go too." So anyways, we get on the bus and we go to Dachau. Now, at the entrance to the camp, there was a brass plaque. And I can't remember the number exactly, Jeff, I'll be honest with you. But the plaque said something like, 2 million Jews were gassed to death here. Okay. Oh, wow, that's pretty serious. So then they take you on a tour of the death camp. We saw the barracks, and barracks looked pretty grim, bunk beds. And then they took us through a museum full of pictures of dead bodies. And then they had this weird kind of exhibit there. These were plexiglass boxes, about 4 feet by 4 feet by about 6 feet tall. Now, the thing with the boxes was they did an old magician's trick. I used to study magic, you know, stage magic. I used to put on little magic shows for my kids in public school. And, Tom, get... And what they do is they put a mirror at a 45-degree angle from top to bottom. And this is the same trick that the magicians use. You know, they show you the box, they open up the box, and you can see that the box is empty because there's a mirror at a 45-degree angle that reflects the inside of the box. So the box looks empty, and you can't see the rabbit behind the mirror. So they did the same thing with these big acrylic boxes. And in one box was shoes, you know, it looked like thousands of shoes. And in another box was eyeglasses, hundreds of pairs of eyeglasses. And in another box was hair, black hair.
Mm-hmm.
And they explained to us that this was the Germans, the Nazis, cut the hair off the Jews in order to make pillows for German housewives. And I went, "Ooh, I don't believe that." I mean, first of all, hair is not fluffy. You know, you'd be far better off stuffing your pillow with straw.
Just as bad as lampshades, which has all been finally admitted to be a fraud.
Yeah, this was another lampshade. Oh, that's why they never mentioned that they cut the hair off because they were fighting typhoid from the lice. But
never mentioned that. Nope.
No. And
by the way, let me go back. Let me back up the plaque. The plaque. There was a plaque at the front entrance of Auschwitz, right?
That's right.
In Poland, and the plaque said. And there are photographs documenting this. The plaque first said, "Through these gates, 4 million Jews passed." They don't mention gypsies, prisoners of war that didn't get along, political dissidents. They didn't mention all the other people there.
Right.
Through this entrance, past 4 million Jews who died here, who were put mm-hmm. to death here, whatever.
Yep.
A couple of years later, I forget what it was, five maybe? They had to revise the plaque from 4 million to 3 million. And then they yep. had to revise it again from 3 million to 2 million. And we have, I've seen these photographs of the plaque each time it was changed.
Yep.
And now it says, from 4 million, it says now, through these gates passed approximately 1 million Jews who were never to walk out alive. Something like
right.
that. So yep. what's the difference? 3 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
One from four is three. Three from six is three. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we had the same thing there at Dachau. There was a plaque, and I'll be honest with you, I cannot remember the exact number. It was anywhere between 200,000 and 2 million or something like that. But anyways,
yeah.
as we found out later, that was all bullshit. Anyways, so then, okay, so then we've got, I'm thinking, that's really disgusting. I can't imagine German housewives really want to sleep on a pillow stuffed with greasy lights infested hair from Jews, you know. But that was the story they told. And then another box full of gold teeth and things like that. But again, it was made to look like there was a lot more than there really was because of the stupid 45-degree mirror that they put inside the box. So mm-hmm. it kind of multiplied how much it looked like there was in there. But whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, well, then finally we get to the big payoff, which is the gas chambers. The gas chambers, Jeff. Mm-hmm. So then they showed us the gas chamber. And, well, I was so disappointed because I'm thinking the gas chamber, I mean, they're murdering millions of people at a time. This must be some industrial level, death contraption. And it turns out it is about the size of your average high school gym showers. It was about 30 feet wide, maybe 40 feet long, right? Mm-hmm. And on either side of the walls, there were shower heads.
Yeah.
Now, the first thing I noticed is going into the gas chamber was there was a wooden door with about a 2-foot by 3-foot window pane right in the middle, single pane of glass, something I could break with my elbow in a second.
Got it.
And I thought, well, that's weird. If you got supposedly 500 people shoved in here, all being gassed to death, I'm pretty sure they would have gone and broken that window to get out or get some fresh air or something, right? I thought that was a really stupid design feature for murdering millions of people, pane of glass. Not only that, the door was like, there was about an inch and a half space at the bottom of the door. Now, the reason there was is because that would allow the water to, flow out and float in, and it wouldn't pool inside the shower area. But if you're gassing people, having a big gap like that under the door, the guards that are waiting outside, they would get gassed. I mean, Jeff, I know this sounds a little bit egotistical, but I've always had a bullshit detector ever since I was a little kid. And
yeah.
I looked at that, and I went, no, that's bullshit. First of all, the pane of glass, and then this big gap in the door. This is supposed to be poisonous gas.
No, it's supposed to be hermetically sealed. It's a gas chamber, right?
Exactly.
And it's supposed to have gone down. Where did it all supposed to go? It supposedly went into the floor drains, which would have spread it all throughout the camp.
Yep.
Killing untold numbers of people. But it's ludicrous. I have had a lot of guests on this program over the years. One of the guests I had on was a Jewish journalist named David Cole. David Cole got onto the Holocaust hoax, as he described it, went over and interviewed the director of the Auschwitz State Museum, Dr. Franziszek Piper, 17 years
uh-huh.
director of the museum after the war. He oversees the whole thing. He, on video tape, told David Cole, and I played it on the program here, that the Auschwitz gas chamber was constructed from an air raid shelter after the war was over under orders of Joseph Stalin to make the world hate the German people and not notice what the communist Bolsheviks were doing. That was part of the game. So, and this was admitted by the state director, 17 years about that. And he said some other things as well. Go ahead.
Phoebe. I'm telling you, my cats are a menace.
Oh.
You still there? Okay.
Yeah, I am. Go ahead. I thought it was interference, but cats, I understand.
No, no, it's my cats. As soon as they hear me talking to somebody on the phone, they're all over the place, jumping on the touch dial.
We'll bring them on sometime. Okay.
PetSmart on speed dial here. I keep wondering why pet cat toys keep showing up at the doorstep.
Got it.
Anyway, so, and then they told us that the gas came out of the shower nozzles. Now, this is early on because they started with the Holocaust propaganda. They're like they really began with that in the, like, I think 1970. So
about right.
70, right?
Yeah, about right.
Because you see, you know,
big industry, big business.
Oh, yeah. Because you see all those war movies from the 1940s and 50s and right. never a mention of a concentration camp, never a mention of a death camp. That all started in the 70s. So they were still, you know, forming their story. They were refining it. And
that's
so
right.
they said the gas came out of the shower nozzles.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, anyways, this was 1973. So this is what I saw firsthand. This is what I've experienced. This is not hearsay information or I saw it on a YouTube video. I was there. And what happened since then is that they've now come out, about 5-10 years later, they came out, retracted all of it. Dachau was never a death camp. No Jews were ever gassed in Dachau. No gas ever came out of the shower nozzles in Dachau. Now, unlike Auschwitz, Dachau actually did have a shower area. And so they just said, oh, well, that's the gas chamber. But, well, we know now that it was a shower room because they had to take a shower because, you know, the inmates, when they arrived, were filthy, and they were bringing disease with them. And so the Germans shaved their head and gave them a shower. Now, from what I heard was that many of the chosen ones, they're not a very clean race of people. They kind of avoid baths, and probably most of them never even seen a shower by that time. And so when they went in there, they were terrified because they'd already been told by the other inmates that they're going to be gassed. And so they just even one of those videos that Spielberg made, you know, when he was documenting.
Yeah, I know the video.
Right? And she said, we went in there and then... And water came out of the shower heads. We were so surprised.
Right.
So that's all it was. It was a shower. But listen, they retracted all of it. No, nobody died there. All those big boxes of hair and shoes and all that had nothing to do with killing Jews. And the big brass plaque was removed. Now, I'm thinking, because I'm still pretty young now. This is about 10 years later. I'm still like 25 or whatever. And I hear all this, and I said, but wait a minute. They took tens of thousands of college students on a tour of this place and fed them this bullshit. How could this have been a mistake? What, it was an accident? Oh, well, we thought 10 million Jews were gassed here, but well, we were wrong. You know, come on. How can you make a mistake like that?
Well, you said it correctly. They were simply launching and refining the product on the way to mass marketing. That's what they were doing.
That's right. That's what they were doing. So I wanted to point that out, that this was one big, giant lie. And we know now, anybody that's researched the subject, that it was all a giant lie. There were no gas chambers anywhere. Besides, the whole thing makes absolutely no sense. You know, prior to this, the Jewish Bolsheviks were murdering 60 to 80 million people in Russia and Eastern Europe. And
that's correct.
They did it the old-fashioned way. Starve them to death and then march them into the field, into the woods in front of an open pit and shoot them in the back of the head. So the Germans, with their German efficiency, decided to load them all onto boxcars and ship them all over Europe and give them haircuts and tattoos and wash them up and give them a place to sleep, only so that they can trick them into going into a shower to get gas. I mean, it's the most ridiculous story. Who could believe this garbage? But people right. do. And so this is the linchpin, this is the cornerstone for their attack on Europeans. We're all guilty of you know, persecuting the poor chosen ones. And so we must all die now. They're trying to genocide us, Jeff. You know that. I know that. And, yeah. and I'm sure many of your listeners know that. And it's all based on this lie, just one example of which I saw firsthand when I visited Dachau.
Well, that's quite a story. Quite a story. As you know, science in terms of... I don't know if Fred Luchter went to Dachau. I don't believe he did. He might have.
No, I don't
he
think
went,
so.
He took the Auschwitz tour and took scrapings from the walls, scrapings yep. from the floors, and did a lot of other work while he was there and proved without a question of a doubt it was all a lie. His yep. report is called the Luchter Report, L-E-U-C-H-L-E-U-C-H-T-E-R. You should read it. It's only about 100 pages long. It's what he found at Auschwitz. He disproved the whole thing. And the, yep. the Red Cross in 1947 brought out their final report on all the dead in all the camps, World War II, etc. They had offices at Auschwitz. They had offices in apparently all the main camps. And there's not one word there about forced gas chamber use. Nothing.
No, nothing. No, I think the reason he didn't go to Dachau, because by the time he was investigating it, the whole Dachau story was discredited already.
Makes sense.
And
Schindler's List
that,
was the Spielberg movie.
Yeah, but he also
List.
Did, he also did a series of videos where he interviewed Holocaust survivors.
Uh-huh.
Remember that was, you know, that broad that kept saying she swallowed diamonds and then pooped them out the next day. He kept swallowing them.
Yeah. Well, that's their business. They own the diamond industry, in case you didn't know it.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, De Boers.
De Beers. Not that you didn't know it, but, I mean, none of our listeners didn't know it. Diamonds were created to have value. They created the whole thing.
Yeah.
Diamonds are usually, they're really worthless.
Yeah, they have some industrial purposes and drills and things like
that's
that. But they're about as common as pebbles. And there's no value to them, you know.
No.
Personally, if I wanted a gemstone that had value, I would go for an alexandrite, which is a beautiful stone. It changes color. But anyways, it's a beautiful. It goes from green to blue and yellow.
You got emeralds, rubies. You know, rubies are used in early laser
yep.
experiments. Rubies, no. If you do any real honest research, you can find how this whole diamond industry was set up to fleece the goyim again. You've got to have a big diamond ring, or the woman won't think you really love her. anyway.
And that was Bernays. Came
Edward
up with that, I believe.
L. Bernays. That's right.
Yeah, the nephew of Sigmund Freud that really knows how to mess with people's heads. There's literally mountains of diamonds in warehouses.
It's true.
That they don't release, because if they were to release all that into the market, the value of diamonds would drop to nothing.
Latest I heard is that the synthetically created diamonds are virtually impossible to tell the difference between those and naturally occurring diamonds. You can't tell.
Yeah, I believe
they can
that.
Make them
I believe
duplicates.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. Anyway, just another big scams that they're always running on people. So, so that was
how
my
about,
story.
How about the Federal Reserve for the biggest scam of all? How about the concept of usury for a scam? That's why Christ threw them out of he threw the money changers out. He knew.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, they have used usury as a method to destroy civilizations, going all the way back to Babylon.
That's true.
Ancient Rome, ancient Sparta. They destroyed all those civilizations. I mean, I have studied the chosen ones for years, ever since 9/11. Because 9/11, before that, I was an honorary Jew. You know, all my friends were Jews. My boss was a Jew. My dentist, my accountant, my doctor, mm-hmm. my, you know, and you know, I've been to the bar mitzvah. I sat Seder, and I know all about the Jews. They love me because I'm a Dutchman. Jews love Dutchmen, and because the Dutch people have always been very liberal and very open, right? And but on 9/11, the thing that clued me off, like I knew within a day that it was Israel behind 9/11. I figured that out really fast. And so then I went to all my Jewish friends. I said, don't you think it's the Israelis were behind that? To a man, they were all shtum. they all played stupid. Oh, no, it was Arabs with box cutters. Come on, Morris.
All right.
Come on, Moshe. You can't possibly believe that. It was the Israelis. Oh, my God, they were all... Because, you know, up until that point, I had known the Jews as being cunning and smart, right?
Yep.
And suddenly they're all stupid. And I'm going, wait a minute, you're all stupid all at the same time, all at once?
That's a funny story. Yeah.
Not one of you could figure it out. It wasn't the Arabs and box cutters. Come on. I thought you guys were all so clever and so smart. But no, suddenly they were all stupid. And then I went, okay, I better look into that. And since then, which is what now? 25 years I've researched them. So, yeah, we could talk for a long time, Jeff, about their shenanigans throughout history. And it's just, unless you've studied them for 25 years,
yeah,
you still can't comprehend the level of deception and evil and...
That's just a fair statement.
And criminality of these, it's born into them. But that's, you know, the other thing I knew, too, that's what I figured out, was they have sort of like a hive mentality, hive mind mentality. They all know what's good for the Jews and what's not good for the Jews. And they always rally around each other for what's good for the Jews. So when I started asking all my Jewish friends about 9/11, yeah. Well, they knew, even if they weren't going to tell me that they knew, they all played stupid. I'm sure a few of them must have figured it out, but they know to keep their mouth shut about Israel being involved in 9/11. So that's what people don't understand. And the same thing with this Holocaust propaganda that they institute back in 1970, or maybe 69, but it started around that time. And they all give lip service to it. They do. Oh, yeah, my family, we lost family in the Holocaust. Everybody lost family in the Holocaust. Well,
every single one of them claims to have lost family in the Holocaust.
Yep. It has nothing to do with the reparations that the Germans paid to them.
And they're still paying.
I know, yeah, I get it on
Facebook. Greatest hustles, one of the greatest hustles ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
I still get it on Facebook. Did you lose friends? Did you lose family in the Holocaust? Well, you might be eligible for reparations. I'm going, anybody that was in the Holocaust is dead now anyways. You know, maybe
no, they're passing along to any blood relatives. They're going right down the line. They're not going to let this go. If your great-grandfather was in there, allegedly, you're entitled to reparations. It's like slavery.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. Same scheme.
Yeah, so
except
they
really were
Jewish
slaves. I don't want to knock that, and that's not okay. But the idea of reparations for slavery 200 years ago, 250 years ago, no. And the first slave owner in America was a Negro gentleman.
That's right. And the first slaves were Irishmen. Are we going to pay reparations to the Irish?
Don't forget that more Caucasian Europeans were captured and sold or forced into slavery than all the blacks ever removed from Africa and brought to the New World.
That's right.
More whites.
Yep.
That's a fact. Look it up.
We actually have a the word slave refers to an entire ethnic group of people, white people, called the Slavs, because they were slaves, and they were preyed upon by the Corsican pirates and that, right? So Slavs means slave.
Gotcha.
So if you're Slavic, that means you're part of the slave demographic. So, yeah, anyways, just another hustle, another scam. I tell my Jewish friends, yeah, you know, I lost relatives in the Holocaust, too. And they said, really? Yeah. What happened? I said, well, I had an uncle.
Uh-huh.
He got so drunk on Hitler's birthday, he fell out of the guard tower and broke his neck.
Funny stuff. Well, it's kind of running toward the end now. More and more people are not afraid to... It was so bad after they foisted this thing on the public that people were actually afraid to use the word Jew or Jewish.
Oh,
you didn't say that.
Yeah.
You didn't say it at all. Now people are beginning to say it, and they're questioning things. The arrogance, the rank arrogance and the avarice of these people is now leading the way, and people are able to see what they are now. They couldn't before, but their greed is just out of control.
Well, that's what I learned in reading their history, because we know they've been kicked out of, 107 countries 1,000 times. And some crazy amount. But that's actually underestimated, because they only go back a couple of hundred years. They've been kicked out of countries. Out of Egypt, out of Babylon.
I think it's 1,300 or something. It is a large number. These are not countries necessarily, but civilization outposts known as, you could say city-states, towns, city-states. All kinds of terminology can be put to work in this issue of groups of people trying to choose their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And they were invaded. And as soon as they're invaded, the money is taken control of. It's the same thing. It's the same people.
Yeah.
They know
same
exactly
things.
What they're doing.
Same modus operandi.
Did we have another story you wanted to talk about? Another issue?
No, other than to say that the reason I wanted to bring that story up tonight is because we need to hack at the root of this evil. Hack at the root, and this whole Holocaust story is the justification for genociding the European races. And the story is a big lie. It always has been. And the more people that understand that, that didn't happen. And therefore, there is no reason to kill me.
No, that won't slow them down any, though. They've been killing people for a long, long time. That's what they do.
I know.
Look what they're doing in Gaza. Look what they're doing in the West Bank. Come on. They just have no qualms. And we are paying for all of it.
That's
how slick they are. And how stupid we are. To allow this to happen is unforgivable.
No, I would never forgive them. And the thing is, what always brings them that down, you know, the famous saying, is it from the Bible? Pride goeth before a fall. It's their own hubris. Eventually, they get to the point, and we see it now. How many YouTube videos do you see about with rabbis bragging about how they're controlling the world and they've taken over everything, and goyim are nothing but cattle? And
it's true. Yeah. They're saying it openly.
They're saying it openly because you know they're confident now. They control everything. They own the banks and all the big corporations. They own the government. They own the media. And now they think they're impervious, and so they can't help but brag about all their evil deeds. But wait a minute, you know, we see it now. Keep bragging, please. More videos of how we're all cattle and how the Jews are the superior ones. You know, which is ironic because they always accuse the Nazis of this. White supremacism, and the Nazis weren't that at all. They just wanted to be left alone. And the real supremacists are the chosen people. They think they are better than everybody else.
Oh, they believe it. And, totally.
And they believe
they actually
it.
Believe it. Yep.
And so it's their own hubris. Keep it up, guys, because more and more people are waking up. I see it myself in the comment sections on every social media. People are no longer afraid to mention the J word. And people are onto them. And so there's an old story that every Jew has a packed suitcase under their bed so that they can make a quick getaway. Well, yeah, better get that suitcase topped off because it's coming again, and it's your own fault because you're on hubris.
Well, they're really calling the shots here, no question about it. Trump has already pledged absolute, total allegiance to funding anything and everything Israel needs or wants. So, it's not our government.
Listen, I've said that about Trump for a long time. I said he's like a stalking horse. A stalking horse is what the Native Americans use to hunt buffalo. Yeah. You walk behind the horse, so what people see is they see a horse. I mean, what the bison see, what the buffalo see is the horse, and they don't see the Indian walking behind the horse or on the side of the horse until they get close enough that they can shoot arrows. So, and Trump is like a stalking horse. They're going to bring down, America. They're going to destroy it. This is going to be the final death blow for America. Now, if the Democrats were in charge, then all the Republicans and the right wing and the people that own guns are going to get really upset. They're going to go, oh, look, you know, Joe Biden just crashed the economy. Or whoever, or Kamala. Oh, God, Jesus, Murphy, Kamala. What a joke.
The camel.
And so,
always the camel to me.
Camel face, yeah. And, we are a dangerous demographic. There's a poem by Rudyard Kipling that goes, when the Anglo-Saxon becomes angry. And basically what he's saying is, you know, the Saxons, they will take a lot of bullshit. You can abuse them for a long time, but eventually it reaches a turning point, and then you better be careful because the Saxons will kick your ass. And that's what would happen, you know, if it was the Democrats in charge and they crashed the economy and they forced all your kids to get sex change operations or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, the average conservative white American that owns guns, well, they're going to say enough of this crap. Let's march on Washington with pitchforks and torches. But because Trump pretends to be like us, you know what I mean, us normal, middle-class, working people with decent values that cares about families and honesty and integrity, that if he does it, it lowers our guard. We won't be as suspicious if it was a Biden or a Kamala that did all this. And that's why I say Trump is like a stalking horse. We won't see it because behind him, walking behind Trump, are the chosen ones. Right? They're hiding behind Trump. We don't see it because most people don't. You can't educate them on the Jews. They don't see it. But there they are behind Trump, using him to get closer and closer. And we are unaware of what's going to happen. So, Trump getting into power, not a good thing at all. It's actually going to be very dangerous the next few years.
Yes, sir. Yep, you got it. Stefan, thank you for sharing that story. It was very interesting. You were right in on the beginning of the whole hype, and they got away with it. I don't know how much they've extorted, but they've got a lot of money out of it. These people are smart.
Yes, they did.
They're greedy. They're a lot of things, but above all, they know how to manipulate the masses.
And yes, they do.
That's something we have to be honest about. They're very talented in that regard.
Yep.
All right, my friend. You take care. We'll talk to you next month. If I can do anything for you, let me know. I'm here.
Thank you, Jeff, and Happy New Year and all that.
Thank you, Stefan. You too.
Oh, by the way, yesterday was my birthday. I turned 68.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank
I hope you,
you
had a nice day, and I'll bet you do have a story or two about something nice. I hope so.
Oh, I have lots of nice stories, but next time we're out of time.
Good deal.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
Good night.
Take care. Good night. All right, that's it for Friday. Thank you for being here this week. We went through a lot of different hoops, looked at a lot of different pieces of information and things for you to consider and make your own decision about. We'll be back Monday. The network, of course, all weekend long will carry the message and the truth forward. Your choice. Listen in anytime at all. Take care. Talk soon.